Welcome to the College Audition Podcast with your host, nationally renowned college audition coach, Tim Evanicki.
Hey everybody, Tim Evanicki here with the College Audition, back again with another episode of the College Audition Podcast. Today, my special guest is Patsy Collins-Bandis, Chair of Theater at Boston Conservatory at Berkeley. Thanks so much for joining us, Patsy.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
So our listeners know we always get to know the person before the program. So I want to hear all about your career and training that's led you up to your time at BOCO.
Excellent. Sure. So I am from Colorado and went to the University of Northern Colorado, which has a great musical theater program and theater program, and have a degree in directing, a bachelor's degree, and spent a lot of time working as a stage manager. Denver Center Theater Company was really kind of my first artistic home. They just do amazing work and are a beautiful group of artists. So I was there as a stage manager for about 7 years and did a lot of freelancing, you know, the life of a theater artist. And then moved out to Boston to be the production stage manager here at Boston Conservatory, and have been at Boston Conservatory really ever since. I've also done a lot of other freelancing with various companies in the Boston area as a director and stage manager. And I also just finished my master's degree at Harvard in November. So that's...
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. So, so that's the, you know, kind of me in a nutshell, but I've been really a director, stage manager. I have taken a really unusual path to academia and working in academic theater. I've been really coming more from being a practitioner and working in theater and producing shows rather than coming from more of the kind of academic background. I don't have a PhD. I'm not coming from that background rather than the, like, you know, really it's the learning on the front lines of doing, you know, more than 100 shows. And so that's,
right. Which, yeah, is that's sometimes where I'm coming from. Way more valuable.
You know, both have value. Both have value. It was the right path for me.
Right.
Having grown up in the middle of the country where New York was such an abstract concept, right? Broadway was like not part of my worldview.
Mm-hmm.
Having that really, you know, just being in the room with the artists was the best way for me to learn what to do, and really learning from the kind of masters of the craft.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it was a great way to get to where I'm at now.
It's wonderful. So I said it's the Boston Conservatory at Berkeley. So can you explain to us, before we get into the intricacies of the program, why it is the Boston Conservatory at Berkeley?
Absolutely. So it was the Boston Conservatory for 150 years. And we are conveniently located next door to Berklee School of Music. The buildings actually are one right next, they alternate. And about 5 years ago, the leadership of both organizations said, hey, maybe it makes sense, since we are so closely intertwined, for us to partner. And under the umbrella organization, or the umbrella Berkeley name, the Boston Conservatory exists as an independent school. So we have our own admissions path. We have our own leadership. We're under the executive director, Kathy Young, who is amazing. And we really operate independently as this small institution, as the Boston Conservatory always has been, with the benefits of this larger Berkeley umbrella, right? So students are able to take classes, like liberal arts classes, for example, at the larger institution. We have the benefit of the health and wellness resources of the larger institution with this gorgeous cafeteria that was just built a couple of years ago. It's like this 3-floor cafeteria that works as a performance venue that has just the Boston Conservatory we wouldn't be able to support with, you know, I believe we have 850 students. The number varies from semester to semester, but it's approximately that. Whereas the larger institution has the resources to really support the student-facing infrastructure. So you get kind of the best of both worlds, of this kind of jewel box institution within this larger structure.
So is it technically a partnership, or did Berkeley absorb?
The two institutions merged.
Okay.
So it is a partnership. It is not that Berkeley bought the conservatory or Berkeley absorbed the conservatory. Yeah, it is an equal, because it is an equal partnership. And it's because there are a lot of things at the conservatory that Berkeley didn't have.
Right.
Berkeley did not have any theater or dance, which is, you know, two of the things that the conservatory was really well known for. And they have, obviously, Berkeley has an incredible jazz and contemporary music program. But the conservatory had much more of the kind of classical and classical contemporary music and composing. So it really was a partnership that each school gained what they needed, right? Mm-hmm. Where there were gaps, rather than one just kind of being subsumed by the other,
right,
or absorbed by the other.
We're going way out of order of what we normally do on these, because now I'm asking questions. Do the students stay in the same dorms and everything, or are those still separate?
I think, and you know, don't fire me if I get this wrong.
I don't think I have that ability. So.
I think the dorms are primarily separate.
Okay.
They are at this point. I know there may be a few students who are on either side.
Right.
You know, but I believe that the conservatory dorms are still the same. They're these gorgeous brownstones right along the Fenway.
Understood.
And they are, I know, building new buildings as well.
Right. I was actually, I went to a vocal pedagogy teacher's summer workshop at BOCO the year before the world shut down, I think. And they housed us in the Berkeley dorms, the ones that are notoriously quote unquote haunted. And I read up on all of that and stayed in those dorms. So I didn't actually know. And it was a question that I thought I'd ask at that moment.
You know, I'm going to have to look that up, but I believe that students generally are separate. Like there are the college dorms, which is typically how we would refer to it, is that the college would be Berklee College of Music, those students, and then the conservatory is Boston Conservatory students. So.
Got it. I'll ask, I can also ask my student, I have Susanna Lowndes is one of my students, and she was my voice student. I built her voice from, I think, sixth grade. She started with me and got her all the way up through. I'll check in with her. I do check-ins with students too, so I'll ask. So we've gotten lots of information already, but I usually ask my guests to give us their elevator pitch, their elevator speech on their program. So we're talking about the theater and musical theater programs, correct? So let's get the elevator speech on BOCO, 60 seconds or less. Go.
Sure. So Boston Conservatory is a program where you come to learn how to be a better version of who you already are. We are not interested in stripping you down and creating a cookie cutter version of anything. We have two programs, one in musical theater and one in contemporary theater. And we are really interested in creating and training the next generation of citizen artists. And training and working with and developing the next generation of artists who are going to go out into the world and change the world with their art. And that can look a lot of different ways. And so that's my elevator pitch, right?
Great.
Come be a better version of who you already are and find your authentic self.
So normally I'm interviewing just musical theater or just theater program on the podcast. So we may have to speak about some things in little boxes here. But before we break that down a little bit more, how do the two programs merge, or do they merge at all? Is there a crossover in the training?
So the two programs do overlap, though not generally until the later years. I really like to think of the two programs, the way they're structured, like trees, that there are the first 2 years are like the trunks of the trees, right? Where there's the foundational curriculum that everyone takes the same thing. And each program in contemporary theater or musical theater, so let's just use musical theater for an example. All the students take musical theater, voice and speech, movement, acting, piano, et cetera, together. And then as they get into the junior year, you branch out from the trunk and they take some classes together and start to have some choice in terms of what classes they're taking. And then by the senior year, you're at more of the leaves where students really have the option to choose what they're really interested in and what their focus is and what direction they're headed. And where those programs overlap starts to be as they branch out, right, and into the leaves. And in those elective courses, so junior and senior acting electives or voice and speech electives, is where you'll start to have students from both programs in classes together. And that's where they're sharing in, and that's in coursework. In productions and performances, students are absolutely together from kind of day one.
Mm-hmm. And it is a conservatory program. So outside of performing, what are the liberal arts requirements?
There are, students do take liberal arts requirements. There are math and science, arts and humanities, and a social science class, plus a couple of liberal arts elective classes, although those can also be filled with kind of theater academics. Mm-hmm. I always say math and science, and everybody's like, oh God, I'm going to have to take trigonometry. But math and science might be, neuroscience for the performer. It might be anatomy. It might be, I'm trying to think some of the other classes. It's one of the benefits of the Berkeley merger, right, is that now we have a much broader spectrum. And because we are a program, we are an entirely arts or arts focused institution, our liberal arts classes are focused for artists.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? They're not classes created for engineering students or geology students, right, or nursing students, whatever. They're classes that are created for art, performing arts students. So it's less intimidating.
Talk to us about performance opportunities and if you have to do musical theater and theater students separately, what chances do students have to get on stage while they're there?
So all of our students in both programs are allowed to audition for all of our shows. It did not used to be the case, but is the case now, that all of our, what we call our main stage or faculty directed shows are open to everyone. And we do, the exact number is a little bit funky because of COVID, but somewhere between 40 and 60 productions a year. Students might have access to audition for. It's typically three large scale musicals, one large scale play, of several other smaller faculty directed plays, and then a huge number of student-directed work, other faculty-directed work, studio work, new play readings. What else do we do? Our contemporary theater program also, as part of their curriculum each semester, does what's called an ensemble performance lab, which is focused on really on the process. And it might be on, for example, last semester they took the idea of Antigone, right, the play Antigone, and looked at it through two contemporary interpretations of the script. And what does that, you know, and about adaptation and how adaptation can affect storytelling. And this semester, one group is working with Woods Hole Oceanic Research Project to do a devised piece around microplastics and the just crisis with the environmental impact of microplastics. So that's the EPLs are a varied, you know, group of things, but the contemporary theater students do that each semester, and then everyone has access to all of the other projects as well.
So on a day-to-day basis, can you sort of take us through a day in the life of a freshman, or a week in the life of a freshman, both MT student and contemporary theater student?
Sure. So let's start with musical theater. Our first year students it's an intensive program, right? Classes typically start at about 9 a.m. and they would have, let's see, they may start with an acting class. You know, they might have, in a week, it would be 3 to 4 hours of acting a week plus 4 hours of musical theater. So it's, classes are typically between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m., 4 days a week, with a shorter day we try to do on Fridays. That would be four hours of acting, 4 hours of musical theater, 3 hours of voice and speech, an individual voice lesson, piano, music theory. I know that, oh, plus dance, sorry, I'm like, and dance. Our students, in their first year, students take ballet and jazz, and most students also take tap. Great. We have a variety of levels of dance. And it's, you know, everywhere from, you know, I am ready to like kick my face on Broadway to like, I have two left feet and I know how to use them. And there is a space for everyone. I know it's one of the things that we hear a lot about our program is like, oh my gosh, it's a dance school. It's really, you can't go there if you can't dance. And that's, I would say, absolutely not true. You can come here if you can't dance because we will teach you how.
That's what I say. Yep.
Yep. You know, I think it is, you know, also if you are an amazing dancer, also come here because we have one of the top musical theater dance programs, right? Like we have an incredible musical theater dance program, and we also have space, you know, there really is a space for that spectrum of dance. So that is the, you know, it is an intensive program. It is really 9 to 7, 4 days a week, and then 9 to 5 on Fridays. And then students go into rehearsals or doing homework, other things after that.
Mm-hmm. And for the theater students, for the contemporary theater students?
Contemporary theater students, the schedule is a little bit lighter, partially because unless they choose to, they are not required to take dance. Their classes, the class lengths are similar. So they may be in class more, say, 9 to 4, 5 days a week. Sometimes Fridays are, again, lighter, where they have the EPL rehearsals, which might be like a 4-hour block on Friday. And then again, evening rehearsals or class meetings with fellow classmates, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And the degree for musical theater is a BFA musical theater, or how is exactly word? Is it BFA theater colon musical theater, or what? How do you word it?
Oh, see, I knew you were going to ask me that. I believe, you know, I am not 100% positive, okay, and I should know that. I believe it is a BFA in musical theater or a BFA in contemporary theater.
Great. I think that's right. I think that's right.
And
I think that's right. Yeah.
I'm kind of embarrassed that I don't know the exact wording.
Well, the reason why I ask is there can you minor in something while you're there? You said you have the access, of course, to the amazing Berklee College. So what minors are available to theater and musical theater students?
You can minor, and there are about 15 different minors in everywhere from gender studies to psychology to entrepreneurship. You can do a minor in dance. You can do a minor in stage management. I'm trying to think. There's one in like music production and engineering.
Wow.
It's quite a few. And it's one of the benefits, right? Mm-hmm. And the way generally minors work is that students are able to kind of select what those liberal arts classes are that they take out of the pool of classes that would be required for the minor, right? So the things say, okay, well, I know I need a social science class, but I'm going to pick one that also counts against the list for the minor.
Great. Let's chat a little bit about notable alum or faculty that are there.
Sure. Let's see, notable alums. So one of our alums was actually just featured on NPR as the first South Asian actor on Broadway in a major role, Shobha Narayan, who is Jasmine in Aladdin.
Yeah.
Spectacular actor and human being. She is, was previously in Wicked as well as many other things. So she was just, a lead story on NPR. Nick Adams is one of our alums who has been in many, many Broadway shows. John Krause of most recently of Hadestown. Also, one of our alums is the conductor of Wicked on Broadway, Dan Michiké. Let's see. It's so hard because generally, if you open the playbook for any Broadway show, you will find a BOCO alum. Delon Grant, who is in Come From Away, is a graduate of our program from the master's program. Let's see. I feel like there's such a list.
There's so many, of course. How about notable faculty or key faculty members?
Key faculty members. So Laura Marie Duncan is one of our faculty members. She also does a lot of our recruiting and admissions. Known from Broadway from South Pacific and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. We also have Larry Sousa, Paul Danio, who is also the artistic director of Speakeasy Stage. In dance, Michelle Chassé is the person who coordinates all of our dance classes.
And she's taught for us before. She's wonderful.
She's spectacular. I mean, and runs the like best dance audition, dance call I've ever seen. Like,
agreed.
It's stellar, whether you're a dancer or not, like just so, so good. Mm-hmm. Currently teaching, we have also Charles Vincent Burwell of Burwell and Strasser, musical theater writing team. Vince just joined us this past year. Marcus Giamatti teaches acting for camera. Let's see. Angela Farr Schiller is joining us to teach contemporary Black playwrights, as well as Evolutions and Revolutions in Musical Theater, which is a new perspective on the history of musical theater. She's a well-known scholar on musical theater and really the decentering whiteness in theater practice. Let's see. We have, it's great. We actually have about 95 faculty who teach in our program. We have Brian Dillon, who is actually taking a leave of absence in the spring to go back to the cast of Aladdin.
Wow.
Yeah,
well, I think this could be it's an entire episode all in its own, talking about alum and faculty at Focus.
Really,
that's
could
really
be.
Great.
It really
that's
could
great.
Be.
Talk to me a little bit about the area where the campus is. It's in a very exciting part of Boston. So chat with us a little bit about what students do when they're not in school.
Sure. So Boston is a surprisingly small town. That's the first thing I'll say, is it's a surprisingly small town. Our campus is right, it's in an area called Back Bay, but right on the edge of Fenway. We're right around the corner from Fenway Park, for anyone who's a baseball fan. And we are an urban campus, and right about a 5-minute walk from the Charles River. And so students, when they are not in class, have the benefit of being able to go down to the Esplanade, which is where the Boston Pops play in the summer. They can take, you know, a 15-minute walk and be in the Boston Common, which is, you know, home of the American Revolution. And it's also, you know, it's a very walkable city. It's a very walkable area. Generally, students do not have cars here on campus. Most students live within a, you know, kind of 5 or 10 minute walk of campus. It is, you know, we are a little bit kind of spread out, as many urban campuses are. The other benefit is within a kind of 5-block radius of the conservatory, there are six other colleges or universities. So it's not like Boco and Berkeley are the only game in town, right? It is very easy to connect with students from other organizations or arts institutions, mm-hmm. right? And several of those are, you know, the Museum School or New England Conservatory is just around the corner. And so it is really, you know, it is really a vibrant college area. Lots of restaurants and, well, prior to COVID, everything, you know, pre-COVID, you know, music venues, lots of mm-hmm. live music, things like that.
Yeah. And even though you say it's an urban campus, don't think tall glass buildings. It's tree-lined streets and beautiful historic brownstones. Some of the most beautiful real estate ever. And then you walk around the corner from the conservatory, and it's the giant baseball stadium. A cute little row of restaurants that I've probably eaten all of them and love all of them too.
Absolutely.
But it's definitely not like going to school in. It doesn't feel like you're in a major city when you're in that little neighborhood. It feels very safe and like I said, green.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Absolutely. It's an urban campus, but not Manhattan. It does not feel like being in that like intensive, like there's city all around you. We are also right off of part of what's called the Emerald Necklace, which is the Fens area of that, which is a park designed by Olmsted that goes throughout the entire city. And so it's literally across the street from our main building. There's this huge park area with kind of wetlands. And we are one of the tallest buildings in our little neighborhood, and we are 4 stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everything around here is, you know, is built, you know, 200 years ago. It is really, as you say, the kind of historic brownstones, and it's quaint, yeah. Not in a cheesy way.
Exactly. Exactly. It looks like it's a movie set. That's what I always thought.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
Let's change gears now and talk about auditions. And this episode will probably air when this year of COVID auditions are behind us. So let's talk as though it's a normal year and hope for the best that next year we'll be back fully normal. But chat with us about how many applicants you receive in a normal year.
In a typical year, we get about 1,400 applicants, between 1,300 to 1,400 applicants, and pre-screens of that applicants.
So 1,400 pre-screens, and what are, do you follow the common pre-screen requirements?
We do, yes.
Great. And so out of those, let's say 1,400, how many do you invite through to a live audition?
We invite through... It depends a little bit on the year, but it tends to be about 35%. So it's about between 400 and 500.
Okay. And so other than on campus, where is it that you will see students in for live auditions?
We see students in New York, Chicago, Atlanta. We see students at Interlochen. And historically, we have also gone to LA.
The Unified City.
Yes. The Unified Cities, yeah. And Atlanta.
In Atlanta, are they your own auditions, or do you attend a group call there, a group audition?
They are our own auditions.
Great. Great. That's wonderful that you're here in the South. There's so many kids down here.
So amazing. We find so many amazing students in the South and in Atlanta, and it's just this wealth of spectacular people.
I'd love to chat with you about possibly coming to our auditions in Tampa as well. That would be a great opportunity. So from those live auditions then, how many spots do you aim to fill for musical theater and for contemporary theater?
For musical theater, our goal is to fill between 65 and 70 spots. And for contemporary theater, now contemporary theater has additional numbers, right? So we have about, for contemporary theater, we have approximately 200 applicants. And then we, our goal is to fill 16 spots.
Of course, I'm sorry that I forgot. We were talking about two different programs in the beginning of that. So let's talk musical theater, and we'll go back to contemporary as its own thing. So musical theater, you're filling between 65 to 70 spots. That is a large incoming class of freshmen, and I know historically that that's been a concern for some of my clients that are looking. How is it that you deal with that number of students to make sure that every student gets their own individual attention?
So what we do, it's a question we get asked all the time, right? So it is our students, when they come in their first year, we put everyone in cohorts of between 13, 12, let's say between 12 and 14 students, right? And those 12 to 14 students take all of their core classes together in the first year. Which is like 95% of their classes. So it feels like they are in a program of 12 to 14 students because they have all of their classes in that small group with that small group of students. Mm-hmm. But the benefit of the larger program is that we are able to offer multiple, you know, we have really kind of 8 levels of dance classes, right? That you wouldn't be able to offer if you only had 14 students in any given year. So we get a little bit of the best of both worlds in this, that students come in and have these small cohorts that they can really have intensive training with a through line across the full year, and take all of their core classes together with that same group of students. And then also have the benefit of having access to the, you know, more electives, wider ranges of levels of dance, things like that, that the larger program has provides.
I mean, you have so many opportunities for performances for them. That's the other concern is that I always hear is that, you know, a class of 70 times four, you have 280 kids fighting for roles. How does that work out for students? Are they ever guaranteed to be a leading role in anything? What does that look like?
That is a question we ask ourselves every day, right? How do we make sure that we are as equitable as possible in making sure that students come here and have an opportunity to go through a production process and perform? And so, as of right now, there is not a guarantee that a student would be cast in a faculty-directed show. It's something, like I said, it's something we talk about literally every day. However, I can say that based on all of our data, and we track it all very carefully, it has not been the case in the past 4 years that a student who has wanted to be in a production has not been in a production, right? We have been able to cast every single one of our students in a show over the course of their 4 years, because we very carefully track and say, you know, here are students who have not been cast. Here are students who have been cast maybe a couple times. How do we balance that? How do we make sure? So it's just something that we have to be very thoughtful about to make sure we are watching who has opportunities, to make sure it's distributed. And it's something, you know, in the near future, it may change that there is a requirement, or, you know, a requirement that students have that as part of that there is a kind of guaranteed opportunity.
Still talking musical theater side of things, do you do a senior showcase?
We do a senior showcase. It is not required, but many of our students do it. But we do a senior showcase both here in Boston and in New York.
So talk to us a little bit about how that works. Again, with 65 to 70 students and the showcase not being required, how does one... Do you audition to be in it? Can anyone who wants to be in it be in it? And again, I'm just talk us through what that looks like.
Sure. So it is not audition based. Anyone who wants to showcase can. Our graduating classes tend to be around, let's see, it depends on the year, right? So between 45 and 60. This year, we brought in a very small class coming into this year's senior class. So we only have about 45 people graduating this year, which is amazing for showcase, right? Because it does give us this nice smaller group. But anyone who wants to showcase is able to. It is a year-long class that is, you know, not an easy lift. There is a significant process to it. And we work very closely with our industry contacts to, you know, they know we are a big program and they know that we turn out really good talent. And so they show up for our showcase. But yeah, it's not by audition. It's not like only 25 people get in and everybody else gets, you know, a lollipop. It's, you know, it is, if people want to showcase, they can. And we are also really clear that if you are not planning on moving to New York within a year of graduating and pursuing a career as a performer, maybe showcase isn't the right choice in this moment, right? Mm-hmm. I think we've talked a lot about how in so many ways showcase feels like this culminating event. And it gets these incredibly high stakes, right? And it's also a very, very small piece of a very long career, right? That it's, you know, 90 seconds of a 50-year career. And if you are going to showcase, that's amazing. And you can get really great work and connections. And if you're going to go to LA for a year or two and do work there, and then maybe move to New York in the future or Chicago, or you're going to go to New York, but you're not really sure, you know, maybe want to look at casting or directing, or while you're working towards being a performer, it's okay to not showcase. Also, some of our most successful alums have showcased and not necessarily gotten a ton of feedback. And so, you know, it's showcase, I think, is one important piece, but it's not the only, it's not the end all be all. So it, you know, I just like, we do it. It's important. We love it. We're incredibly proud of it. It's not the only thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's step back now and talk about all of that same stuff, but for contemporary theater. So, audition process for contemporary theater. Do you pre-screen for contemporary theater?
We do not pre-screen for contemporary theater at the moment.
Okay. And what are the then audition requirements for contemporary theater?
So contemporary theater comes in, it's two monologues, and then there is a workshop devising piece. It's, imagine it's like a dance call, but in more theater movement devising structure, rather than a more kind of traditional musical theater dance.
Mm-hmm. I remember a student that auditioned for that, that called me after in a panic. They made me improvise for 30 seconds in front of, they were terrified. It was a very funny phone call that I received, but
yeah, it's funny because it feels so, it feels very daunting because there is a lot of, in contemporary theater in general, there is really a focus on how can each individual artist find their own unique path, right? Mm-hmm. And that starts in the audition, in mm-hmm. in that improvisational section. And there is a freedom that can be incredibly terrifying. And I will say,
you said that. I like the way you said that, a freedom that can be incredibly terrifying. Well said.
Right? It is. I mean, like, I go, when I watch auditions sometimes, and I'm like, I imagine myself on the other side of the table, and I'm like, these students are incredibly brave, right? They're incredibly brave to walk into this room and just say, like, here I am, and I, mm-hmm. you're asking me to do this, and okay, I'm going to do it. And there, I have such admiration for that, because I am not a performer, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I would just be terrified. But yeah, no, there is that freedom in that that's so liberating and terrifying. But I think they're also in incredibly good hands with our audition teams, right? That they are some of the most compassionate human beings I have ever known. That they go into those rooms with the expectation that every single one of those students is going to succeed and soar, and are able to kind of hold that space for that fear in a really beautiful way.
So tell us again, the numbers of applicants versus how many spots you're filling.
So we have, between 180 and 200 applicants for CT, and we are filling 16 spots.
So what qualities are you looking for in students when you're in that audition room that would identify them as candidates for your program?
So this is true for both programs. We are looking for people who are unique, who are brave, who are willing to come in and be themselves, Yes, there is a sense of talent that we are looking for, though I would say that is not necessarily by any means the highest thing on the list. And we look for people who are able to come in and be themselves. And we look for potential. Where is, it's not necessarily the person with the most training or the most, the most years of dance or anything who's the slickest or the most polished, right? It's the who can come in and say, here is my authentic self that I'm going to share with you.
Beautiful. So, as we're wrapping up this episode, can you tell us some things that you are looking forward to in the coming semester?
Yes, so I am looking forward to. We have a production of Machinal that is coming up in February, directed by Teresa Lang, one of the head of our contemporary theater program. So that is happening. We are also doing a production of Rent, directed by Ricky Tripp, directed and choreographed by Ricky Tripp, and music directed by new faculty member Dave Pepin. Let's see. We also. There are so many things going on. I also think I personally am looking forward to just having people in the room together, right? And I know that sounds so cheesy, but after
I think we all
COVID,
understand.
right?
We all understand.
After COVID, I think, or, and I know we're in COVID, but after this time of separation, we collectively are learning how to be in the room together again and how to feel each other's heartbeats again. And there's this beautiful joy in the hall when you walk down the hallway with students and everyone is able to feel that and the singing and the resonance, right? You feel the resonance in your body. And just to have everyone in the room making art is really. Really, what I'm looking forward to, and I know that's I know, like I said, I'm gonna own my own cheesiness here, but that's there's something really beautiful, and the joy that our students bring in supporting each other and supporting themselves and supporting the work.
Great. Amen to that. I think we can all empathize with that. Certainly, pandemic fatigue setting in across the board, and hopefully we're on our way out of this. So if students want to know more information on either the musical theater program or the contemporary theater program, where should we send them?
You should send them to our incredible admissions team. You can send them to admissions@berkeley.edu. You can send them to our website. There is a fabulous theater page on bostonconservatory.edu. And you can also, send them to Google Boston Conservatory. We will come up. So yeah, our admissions team is spectacular. If the admissions team has questions, if students have questions the admissions team can't answer, they'll send them over to us directly.
Great. Well, Patsy, it was so nice to sit down and chat with you about BoCo and learn some more about the program. And I hope to be in touch in the very near future to have you do some workshops and stuff with our kids.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely speaking with you as
Absolutely.
well.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
For more information on the exciting training, workshops, and masterclasses offered by The College Audition, please visit us online at www.thecollegeaudition.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok.